and available in both English and Spanish. More information can be found at BoulderCountyHealthCoverage.org.
Okay, we're ready to hear the final part of Louis Karchin's Jane Eyre. Libretto is by Diane Ossin. And I want to say a little bit about the work itself and a little bit about some of the story, in case you're not familiar with it. Karchin says, Jane Eyre was composed between 2010 and 2014 and is by far the largest project I have ever undertaken. The first scene of Act One is roughly divided into three parts, the opening fire music followed by two arias of Jane's. The first traces Jane's transformation from unloved orphan to self-assured governess. The second, following a shorter free section, is more reflective and speaks of Jane's growing fascination with Rochester. The three great Donizetti operas are actually mentioned in the text, including Lucia di Lammermoor with the mad scene, which is a little interesting since there's a scene like that in Jane Eyre as well in the novel. The second scene contains folk music, says Karchin. In a few cases, it incorporates songs gleaned from a book of 19th century English parlor music. In Act Two, we expand to the music of Jane's previous entrance. In Act One, Lawyer Briggs's music comes along as he objects to the wedding that is taking place. The overture to Act Three represents Jane's harrowing flight from Thornfield, gradually calming to reveal the pastoral mood of a country setting. The introduction of the children is a crucial component of Act Three. Jane is teaching in a one-room schoolhouse and providing her charges with a positive educational experience she was denied. Musically, this opened an opportunity for another orchestral flowing, explains Karchin. Mrs. Fairfax later relates the story of a fire that destroyed Thornfield and incapacitated Rochester. As the music gains in intensity, it recalls the fire music of the very opening of the opera. A slow transition now follows as Rochester, now nearly blind, gradually intuits that Jane has returned to him. Jane's return provides a redemptive quality to the end of the opera that is underscored by a touching moment. Rochester, one arm incapacitated, attempts to play and sing one of the folk songs that reminds him of happier days with Jane. She joins him in the duet, and they affirm their enduring love. The dissonance found during St. John's demands on Jane and her subsequent indecision is banished in favor of a final moving duet, some of the most resolutely consonant music that Karchin has composed to date. Let's hear the end now of Louis Karchin, who was born in 1951, his opera Jane Eyre. Jane Eyre, sung by Jennifer Zetlin. Edward Rochester, sung by Ryan McPherson. We also are hearing Thomas Meglioranza, Jessica Thompson, Katrina Thurman, Kimberly Giordano, Adam Kennedy, Jessica Bess, and David Salisbury Fry, with the Orchestra of the League of Composers, and Louis Karchin, the composer, also the conductor. We'll just kind of slide on into the music right now.
Close your book, Wood. There will be no wedding today. Now, Dick, don't be afraid. It's your sister who bites. Bigamy is an ugly word, yet I confess I'm not contrite. I meant to make Miss Eyre my own, to soothe my pain, to ease my plight. She did not know my sinful plan, so innocent she thought me pure. But what you say, for gold my father hid the truth, a legacy of drink and vice, of maniacs in asylums, each parent she copied precise. My mad, mad murderous wife. Away with you, Dick, depart, Mr. Briggs. John, Mrs. Fairfax, go get that carriage. Both here, like a bullet from a gun. Here I throttle you with my bare hands. sustain your reputation. Once we are in Florence, you shall have an explanation.
But I cannot go to Florence. You are made to bear the mason.
That woman was never my wife. Even before she lost her mind, body and soul were corrupted by gross depravities defined. We did not share a moment's love, yet I kept her fed and clothed here, despite her murderous nature. Grace Poole is an expert keeper. Which choice does your conscience teach? Driving me to despair or defying a convention which harms no one but us in the breach? I've done all that God and man demand. Why should I not be free to love, to take you as my wife? Dear Jane, our union blessed. Shocked and scared and need to think, I'll fetch some water while you rest.
It's he, not I, who's been deceived. The devil's work he can't perceive. To welcome sin, such evil, sir, I won't embrace. Like plucking out my own right eye, to leave you now with no goodbye. I forgive you, dear master. I beg God to keep.
Thank you.
what an unexpected surprise. How much these children are learning. I see such delight in their eyes. I am blessed to be their teacher.
That is a noble sentiment. It becomes you, Miss Elliot. But as we have come on business, may I ask you ladies to sit?
What do you mean, Mr. Rivers?
The man who handles my affairs writes with an intriguing story about an orphan named Jane Eyre, despised by her rich guardians and sent off to earn her fortune. Miss Eyre becomes a governess in the old secluded mansion of Mr. Edward Rochester. They fall in love, are meant to wed, until she learns at the altar another wife has shared his bed. A lunatic, true, but living. She flees the house that very night, and not a soul has seen her since. Mr. Briggs wonders if I might prove of assistance in this search.
Why does Mr. Briggs write to you?
Because I am a clergyman and obliged to help the needy. And because she is our cousin and needs must own the connection.
You say Jane Eyre is your cousin.
The daughter of our long dead aunt and niece to our late Uncle John of Madeira, a wine merchant who wished to raise Jane as his own. But her guardian interfered. She saw the little girl was dead. Must come as shocking news, but there is more that I must share. He left us nothing in his will. His hard-earned wealth goes to Jane Eyre. £20,000. You're a wealthy woman now.
What an enormous sum! I can hardly take it in.
Briggs is the executor. I shall write to him at once. You shall not be cheated again.
Oh, 5,000 will do nicely. I have no use for luxury. The rest I gladly share with you.
beg of you, Jane, hear me out. You are pious, industrious, very docile and heroic. Constant, faithful and generous. These qualities are pure and rare. True gifts that you're obliged to use to make the world a better place. What higher calling can you choose than teaching heathen our faith?
I do wish to please you, Saint John, and perform my Christian duty, but I feel as though I'm a pawn in a scheme that does not suit
you
me.
You can change the bent of nature.
I
know this from experience. My desire to rise higher has eclipsed all other feelings. But my ambition I renounced. It's my need I could not meet.
To remove myself from this place.
So I obey when God announced that I must preach in India.
But I've had no
as his instrument. God speaks through me, and I assert it was his will that you were sent here. A sickly, starving stranger, we nursed you, gave you employment, and saw you in the schoolroom hide your shameful disappointment. But you need not hide anymore. My wife to India and see what the Lord has in store for one who serves himself selflessly.
But to go in the position of a wife in name and custom leads me to
I want is a lawful wife to mold and guide throughout her life. Passion is overrated, Jane. Need I remind you of the pain caused by Mr. Rochester? That passionate imposter. The love you cherish is lawless, and you long since should have crushed it. I cannot give you up to hell. Repent now, or die bit by bit. God's given you the strength to choose the duty he's assigned to you. Come to India as my wife. Do as you know.
brought me naught but shame.
Field, and now it is lost.
forgive my babbling, Miss Eyre. I never thought to see you here with all the shocks of this long year. I have lost my old composure. It is I who must beg pardon for appearing without warning. I did not know you thought me dead. I'd no idea.
That will be all until I call.
As you wish, sir.
The truest love that ever heart felt at its kindled core did through each vein in quick and start the tide of being born. Her coming was my hope each day, her parting was my pain. The change that did her steps delay was ice in every vein. I dreamed it would be a nameless bliss as I loved, loved to be.
And to this object I did press as blind as eagerly.
Who is here?
new opera. We heard the final scenes, which took a good hour, from Naxos American Opera Classics, Louis Karchin's Jane Eyre, libretto by Diane Osen. It is now 7:58, and this is KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm Chris Moore. This is Opera Box, and I just got this in my CD bin and thought it would be very interesting to play something that is this recent, still, you know, it was only begun this very decade. I'd like to mention some of the other events that are happening in the world of opera and in the world of music that may be of interest to vocal lovers. On the 26th, the Met Opera is putting on its film version of Manon, the HD live. On the 27th, Arias at Avos up at Opera Fort Collins, their guild up there is putting on some arias there. On, October 31st through the 3rd of November, CSU, the Ralph Opera, L'Enfant et les Sortilèges of Maurice Ravel. And then the 2nd through the 10th, Opera Colorado is putting on The Barber of Seville at the Ellie Calkins Opera House in downtown Denver. That one you definitely don't want to miss. That's a major performance and a major production. In fact, it's so major that I'm dedicating the entire hour next week of Opera Box to that, and we're going to have an interview as well with Greg Carpenter, the general manager there. The Met Opera comes back with Madama Butterfly on their HD in the movie theaters on the 9th of November. And then on the 15th, at CU, the Eklund Theater Company, it's A Wonderful Life, a new opera that is going to be of, I think, great interest to opera lovers and also people who just like seasonal things, maybe a little bit early. Now, just for fun, you might want to go see the BDT stage or Boulder's Dinner Theater and their production of Mamma Mia, which I just saw, and it is fun. It's a lot of fun. And I'd like to mention also, speaking of vocal music, that there's a really great performance coming up of the Verdi Requiem. This is quite a piece by, of course, the great opera composer Giuseppe Verdi, and it is so dramatic and so operatic that the Pope and the Catholic Church in general condemned it as being just too theatrical and not appropriate for religious purposes. We're going to hear Amber Wagner singing as a soprano in this Colorado Symphony production or performance on the 26th through the 27th, along with other singers as well. Colorado Symphony Orchestra Chorus, and Dwayne Wolfe is directing that. ColoradoSymphony.org is the phone number if you'd like to go to that. And then, actually, not too far after that, on the 15th and 17th, Renee Fleming is coming for the Colorado premiere of The Brightness of Light. Kevin Putt is going to be the composer. Schoenberg's Verklärte Nacht, or Transfigured Night, begins it, and then it goes from there. And there will be not only the music inspired by the letters written by Georgia O'Keeffe, but I believe also some of her paintings, but there will be some slideshows that go along with it. A film by Wendell Harrington, The Brightness of Light, will go along with it. So do check that out with ColoradoSymphony.org. And if you're not familiar with how the Verdi Requiem sounds and why the Catholic Church in the 19th century thought it was a little bit too theatrical, that's because it sounds like this right here.